Hello, everyone. This is Steve Martin. Welcome to Stars on Tap. Today is September the 2nd, 2014. Our guest today was the very first artist on Berry Gordy's Motown Records. This is Dr. Mabel John. Welcome. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you, Steve?
I'm doing well. Like I was telling you earlier, it was the first school day for my oldest granddaughter, and she just came in the door. And I'm sure I'm going to hear an awful lot about it here in a little bit. But first, we're going to talk to you about some interesting music business.
All right. Well, you know, it's always good talking about your past and then living in the present and making plans for the future.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's what makes life.
It makes life worth living.
Absolutely. Tell us about winning an Oscar for the video 20 Feet from Stardom. I saw that movie, by the way. I saw you in it. It was an excellent movie.
Okay. 20 Feet from Stardom was a great project for us. I've done four projects for that producer. And it's always a pleasure working with them. But it was about the life and history of background singers.
Mm-hmm.
I never classified myself as a background singer, although I sang with Ray Charles and was the director for the Ray Charles Raylettes.
Wow.
But the experience is something that's very historical, and that's what made the documentary, I think, so enjoyable to people, because it talked about how we got started and a lot of the people in the film had been done very wrong by people that they trusted. Thank God I never had that experience, because the only person I ever sang in the background for was Ray Charles. His mother, Miss Bertha Gordy, gave me the first job I ever had. I was in high school getting ready to go to college in Detroit. And she used to tell me that she had a lot of children like my mother and father did. I'm the oldest of 10 children. And she met my mother and father, and they would have a lot to talk about. She was in the insurance business. So she taught me the insurance business. Later on, I met her son, Barry, Barry Gordy.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't realize that when I met him that he was the person that she had been talking about. He didn't have a company at that time. He was writing songs for Jackie Wilson and wrote some of his first hits. He started coaching me and also the group that became The Miracles.
Uh-huh.
And he managed us until he got a company. And he could not place me, he said, with another company because he would do masters on us, and he would shop those masters in New York to put us on a label. And so he said to me in the presence of Smokey Robinson, for some reason I have not been able to place your master. So there, the Smokey Robinson said, and along with me at the same time, why don't you start your own company? And I said, and I'll stay with you forever. Well, then he just looked at both of us and said to Smokey and I, don't ever promise anyone you're going to stay with them forever. You're only expecting certain things from me, and I'm hoping to be able to follow through on them. But if I can't, and someone over there can, you have to know that we can be friends for life, but you need to go wherever your dream is carrying you. So he started Tamla label, Berry Gordy did, and I was the first female single artist ever signed to the label.
Well, and had
some nice success there, but not worldwide success at that time.
Just to be curious, what was your first single for Motown?
Who wouldn't love a man like that?
And it just didn't go over well? I mean, what actually happened to it?
You see, Barry was just starting the company. And he didn't have the national publicity that he attained after that time. sold about 300,000 copies, but that's not a million records. But somehow, that song remains a song that everybody remembers. I can go anywhere all over the world, and they will sing to me, "Please sing this song. Who would love a man like that?" And I'm saying to myself, "You still remember that song?" That was in 1961.
I was 2 years old.
Oh, see? So, you didn't even get a chance to argue about the task. You just listened to whatever they had on the radio.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But you know, Barry had such a dream, and we trusted and worked with him because we thought that he would be the one to get us on the map the way that we were looking forward to. So that was our foundation. And the way he planned it, we all the Motown people, believe me, they have a good foundation. Because his mother, his sisters, and his entire family came along with the company, and we all got in together to help make it what it became. So I'm very proud of my Motown days and pre-Motown days. After that time, you know, I went to Sax Records. It was a new company also. Isaac Hayes and David Porter and Booker T and the MGs, Carla Thomas and myself, Eddie Floyd. We were all there, and that was the place where Jim Stewart would ask you when you get ready to record, "Did you bring anything with you?" And I said, "No, I didn't bring anything with me," because at Motown, they got all the songs for you and told you how to sing them and told you what to do, and we just did that. So I didn't know what your criteria was. I said, "Well, we do everything together. You have a chance to use your talent, and we mix our talent with yours." And of course, I had great success at Stax. And it was a different kind of school, because it was one where I could use my own creativity, and I was able to help develop my talent along with them. So the first song that I recorded, I wrote at Sax Records. Isaac Hayes and David Porter, when I got there, they said, "These are your producers, and you all will get together and put some songs together and record them." Well, they didn't have anything for me, and they didn't know me, so we just sat down and talked. And I said, "Since you don't have anything, I have a story I want to tell." And Isaac started to play the piano. Incidentally, I was living, we all stayed at the Lorraine Motel in Memphis, where Dr. King was assassinated.
Mm-hmm.
And believe it or not, the same room that he always occupied, that's the room that I had.
Wow.
And Isaac Hayes started playing the piano, and I started telling the story that I wanted to tell, and David Porter started to write, and together we wrote My Million Seller, Your Good Thing's About to Come to an End. That was 1966. And today, that song still sells. It has sold more than a million copies. It's become a classic. And, you know, I just thank God for every blessing, because the gift comes from God. And in my going to Sax every 4 to 6 months to record some more, I happened to be there at the Lorraine Motel when Dr. King was coming in.
Mm.
And I was asked by the owners of the Lorraine Motel, since I stayed over a day later because trying to think of his name. And now he had stayed over and kept and did some of my time, because we each had so many days in the studio.
Mm-hmm.
That was Otis Redding. So he said to me, "I took a day of your time, so I'm going to give you my engineer to engineer for you today while you're here, and I'm going on to Madison, Wisconsin." Well, by me staying over a day longer, I stayed in on a day that Dr. King was to come in. And when Dr. King, they told me in the office that you have the same room that Dr. King always liked, and do you mind taking a room down the hall and so we can get it ready for him? He'll be in. I said, well, I'm leaving tomorrow. I'll take a room down the hall, because when I leave and go to the studio, when I finish, I'm going straight to the airport. Well, it gave me a chance to say hello and goodbye to Dr. King. When we got off the plane in Chicago, I was living in Chicago at that time, all on the news, all through the airports, Dr. King has been shot. Dr. King is dead. And it was just so much going on at that time. But that's a part of that sex history. That's a part of Memphis history. It's a part of my history. And we're always glad to talk about our history. Now, during that time, after Dr. King's burial, Stax Records closed, and Ray Charles started calling me to ask me if I would find someone that could take over the Raylettes for him. And I said, I don't know if I can find anybody, because I don't know anybody that has your sound. And I wouldn't want to recommend somebody and they didn't work out, and then you would say, why did you send me that person? So finally he kept saying that to me. And another man that was close to him, he talked to him. And he said, I've been trying to get Mabel John to come and be the director for the Raylettes, and she turned me down. So he said, well, I don't know why she would do that. That man was named George Grogan. His father used to book those one-night shows of us when my brother and I were traveling all through the South during one-nighters. And the father, George Grogan Sr., was the promoter. And this was his son that was working along with him. So this son, one Sunday I was in Detroit with my mother, and I said to her, I said, Ray Charles has been calling me, but I can't find anybody to do what he wants him to do. I said, so if he calls here, don't tell him I'm here. He said, well, you know, I'm not going to lie. I said, well, I can't find him anybody, and I don't know what to do from here. So one morning, he called. And my mother brought the phone. I was still in bed asleep. Put it to my ear. And then she said to me, wake up, Mabel. Ray Charles is on the double phone.
Oh, no.
And he wants to talk to you. So I started to say, Mother dear, I told you. And Ray Charles finished out my sentence. He said, I know you didn't want to talk to me. He said, but I can't find anybody. Have you found anybody? I said, no, I haven't. Well, this George Grogan had called me and said, Mr. Charles is a good man to work for. He pays his bills. He don't believe in debt. He takes care of all of the expenses. You don't have to worry about anything. You have worked all of the Chitlin' Circuit. You worked all over the United States. This could be another step and another level for you to work with him. And I said, well, if he calls me again, I'll talk to him, if he asks me. So he told, Ray told him that I turned him down. I said, Ray didn't ask me to come and work for him. So when he called me that morning, and my mother had the phone to my ear, he said, you didn't find anybody? I said, no, I haven't. I said, I'm very cautious about things like that. He said, and you don't want the position?
Hmm.
I said, you never asked me to take it. I said, I don't even know what it is. He said, I need someone that understands contracts, understand ladies and what they need. I want the ladies kept off of me. I don't want to have to deal with all this women stuff. I want somebody that can take care of all of that. He said, and I need a lead singer. I don't need a background singer. I need a lead singer. I need someone that's going to be the director for the Raiders, take care of all that business. He said, like you've been taking care of yours. And he said, will you take the job? I said, well, I can think about it since you told me. He said, you in Detroit now with your mother? And I said, yes. He said, well, I'm going to New York to the Apollo Theater. I'm going to send my plane to get you.
Wow.
And you can come here and we can talk. I said, I don't fly private planes. Now, at that time, Otis Redding's plane had just crashed.
Mm-hmm.
And I had said, because Otis asked me, when you get through recording, why don't you fly on back to and then have your driver pick you up in Madison and drive you back to Chicago. I missed that flight with him because I told him I don't fly private planes. So, Ray said, if you're thinking that my plane is going to crash, the reason why you don't fly private planes, he said, you better not take a shower because you may slip and fall in the tub and kill yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, well, I can take a shower or I can take a bath, but I'll be careful. I'm the one in charge. So he went on to tell me about his pilots and the people that serviced his planes. At that time, there was an airline called Eastern Airlines.
Mm-hmm.
And Eastern Airlines mechanics were the mechanics for Ray Charles' plane. And he said, I don't want to die either, on a plane, neither off the plane. So I said, well, I won't come to New York because I'm here with my mother and I only have a few days off. He said, well, I will send for you and you come to California when I get back there and we'll sit down and talk. And he said, if you want the job, it's yours. I said, I never sang with a group in my life. I said, I'm a single artist, been a single artist for 15 years. He said, I know all about your career. That's why I'm calling you. Well, it was the best decision that I made, best business decision, because he sat down and we talked about everything. He allowed me to write down the rules and laws that I wanted put into our contracts so the ladies would remain ladies and that everything would be done the way he wants it done. We talked about the money because George Grogan Jr. said to me, say, now, he's cheap. And we laughed about that as long as Ray lived. He said, but he's honest. And whatever you negotiate with him for, you might not ever get a dime more, but you will never get a penny less. So I said, I can work for that man. Because all you have to do is do what you say. So we negotiated. We negotiated my pay. He said, I'm going to pay you to sing, and I'm going to pay you to be the director. He said, I want you to sing the same part that I sing, which is the lead part. And he said, now I want you to bring all of your music, because I want to present you and let you sing your own songs so people can know who I have with me. And he followed that as long as I was with him. I have never worked for anyone else. I just worked for promoters and handled contracts. And my sons and I started a publishing company years ago while they were with Ray Charles, Joel Webster and Lem Taylor. And today, to this date, my company, the Otis Music Group, and Ray Charles Tangerine Music, we share 52 songs publishing together that we wrote. And my sons recorded for him, and I recorded for him. And he was a man of his word. I had a chance to go all over the world with him because we did a world tour every year. And I traveled with him, I guess 8 or 9 years. But I never stopped working with him because I worked behind the scenes with him. We wrote songs together and I would write songs for him to record. And it was a wonderful relationship. And while standing on stage with him in Birmingham, Alabama, I heard while we were playing What I Say. And I had taught the girls how to beat a tambourine. So we were beating the tambourine and playing around on stage and getting ready to close for the winner. And I heard a voice talk to me and say, "Mabel, go home. I have something for you to do." And I knew it was the voice of God. It was nobody standing beside me but the girls. So I said to one of the girls, Vanita, I said, "I just heard a voice telling me to go home." And she just kind of chuckled. She said, "Huh?" And she said, "Mayberry is hearing voices. She just heard a voice say, go home." And at that time, Ray Charles was saying, "Baby, let's go home." And we would sing behind him, "I want to go home with you." And I said, "No, this is not nobody standing here. This was a voice. This was another kind of voice." So we exit the stage after Ray, and I waited 2 months and called him and told him I needed a meeting with him. And he said, "Why do you need a meeting with me? You work with me." I said, "No, this has to be a meeting." So he gave me the appointment, and I told him that I needed to stay home that year. And I started to cry because I knew I had heard the voice of the Lord, and I did not want to let him down, and I could not let God down. I did not know what I was going to do. I didn't know why I had to come home, but I knew I had to. So when I started to cry, he got up from behind his desk and came and sat behind me, took my hand and said, "John, I don't know what it is you think you have to do, but if you do it half as well as you have served me, you got to make it. Now, what can I do to help you?" I said, "Nothing, because I don't know what I have to do yet." And he never changed. I was at members of a church, Christian Center. I sat there a whole year, just sat in the congregation, reading the word, studying the word, and getting the word. And then I found out that I needed to go into the school of ministry because I became a counselor. And I said to myself, "Now why do I've already been trained to counsel, so why do I need the school of ministry?" I said, "But I'll go." So I finished the school of ministry. I was licensed and ordained as a minister. And then the Lord spoke to me again and said, "I want you to learn the Bible in its original language." So when you preach to the people, you're telling them the truth. And I did that. I studied the Bible in Israel and here in its original language. And that's how I achieved my Doctor of Divinity degree. And I continue to write. I perform whenever it doesn't conflict with my ministry. And we have a large program where we give food and clothing and help to people in need. And we preach the word of God. My ministry is Joy in Jesus Evangelistic Outreach Ministry. And it's here in Los Angeles. And that's what I do on a daily basis. And as a matter of fact, when I get through talking to you, I'm on my way today with one of my members to go and make arrangements for my minister of music that just passed away over the weekend. Delbert Taylor, we call him the maestro. But God is good, and every gift comes from God. And the four projects that I've done, because I've done one film with Danny Glover, Honey Dripper, and I did the Ray Charles story, the Stack story, and 20 Feet from Stardom, with the same producers from 20 Feet from Stardom. But I never let anything get in the way of me doing what God called me to do. And that's where my blessings, I know, come from.
What an interesting story. Wow, I appreciate you sharing that. That's just a great story, and I'm really proud that you were able to do and still doing what you follow your convictions, and that's what we all need to do. But some people don't listen.
That's right. But you see, if I had not listened to that, I don't know. Maybe I was headed for something that was going to be disaster. I don't know that. See, God knows everything from the end before the beginning. But we don't know. We know in part. We see in part. And sometimes because we don't listen, we don't get the instructions right. But God never makes any mistakes.
Exactly.
And I was so glad to find out that it's you and your wife that has this program. Because I am so interested in husbands and wives staying together, praying together, looking after the grandchildren together. It's such a delight because that's what God wants.
Well,
And I don't care how many times they run in the studio to interrupt you, that's what you're supposed to do, is listen, to give them some time to listen, so they can have a legacy that you left for them, and they don't know how to live their life.
that's what I'm working on.
I know.
That's
I
awesome.
know.
I appreciate the good words. Let me ask you a couple of things before I let you go. The legendary Little Willie John was your brother. Tell us how
Right.
he had an effect on you and your career.
The effect, well, even before he had a career, he had an effect on the whole family. He was the singingest person in the family. He is the fifth child of the 10 children, and I'm the first child of the 10 children, sisters and brothers. And we had our own singing family group as children, and we called ourselves the United Five, and Willie was the singer, one of the singers in that group, and he always stood out. He always took the show. It didn't matter. We sang with all of the Dixie Hummingbirds, the Soul Stirrers, and everybody doing the quartet era. And Willie always took the show. We had a lot of respect for what his talent, and we knew it was from God because nobody had taught us. Only our mother and father. We had my mother played guitar and my father played guitar, but never in the public. We just did that at home. And from there, that's where our careers took off. And it was Dizzy Gillespie and all of the big band leaders during that time that talked to my mother and father about Willie coming on the road with them. And Willie just kind of, I guess, listened. He didn't know he was listening to the Lord, but he listened to the Lord and followed his own, whatever he was hearing, and was able to achieve great acclaim. Not as much as he should have, because I think he died much too soon. But I went on the road with him, and I traveled, and I opened for him. It was Etta James that suggested that I go on the road with my brother and open for him, because she used to go on the road with him. We were booked by the same booking agency, Universal Attraction. And she said, she and I were doing some one-nighters together and some club work. She said, I don't want to open for him anymore. You should be doing that. And she called him and told him that. He said, well, she never said she wanted to work with me. And I told her the same thing. He never said he wanted me to work with him. So then he said, do you want to work with me? I said, if you want me to. And that's how that happened. And
Wow.
we would do one song together on every show. I'd do my set and introduce him. And then he would bring me back on to do a duet with him. And usually it was something that, during that time, Book Benson and Donna Washington was doing some duets together. And we would do, one of the songs we would do is, It's a Rockin' Good Way to Mess Around and Fall in Love. And he and I would do that as the closing of our show. And I did that until he went to prison, and then he was not—he passed in the interim of coming home from all of that. But God gave us a gift, and what we do, we sing to His glory, and we give the gift back to Him, so He can give it back to us. So it's just—it's a give, an acceptance, and return every day of our lives.
That's awesome. Just truly awesome. You've got such a rich history of. You should write a book.
I'm trying to find a publisher now. I've written 3 books, David Ritz and I, but they were not my life story and history, and I'm ready to do that now. And I'm looking for a publisher, because those books were for Random House, and I don't know if they're interested in, you don't know what people are interested in. So if I can find a publisher, I'm ready to get right it. I'm ready to start on it.
That's awesome. And when you get that book done, I'd hope you'd send me a signed copy of that book.
Oh, I sure will.
That would be awesome. The one thing before I let you go, I wanted you to discuss your philanthropy projects as seen on BET and CNN.
You mean the work that we do for the homeless and giving the food?
Yeah, that sort of stuff, yeah.
Yes, people that wanted to, we have sent 33 children to college. We have a college program. And it's Joy in Jesus Scholarship Fund. Or if you send it to the Mabel John Scholarship Fund, it goes into the same scholarship account. My ministry is Joy in Jesus, and you can find us on the internet if you go into www.joyinjesus.org, and then you can link right up to MabelJohn.com, and you can see all of my music and all of the works and work that we do. If you go MabelJohn.com or JoyInJesus.org, and anybody that wants to send donations for scholarships, we have a scholarship event coming up, and I'm honoring a lot of the people that was in 20 Feet from Stardom, which is the Blossoms, Susie Green, and Charlo Crosley.
Oh, both good friends of mine.
Yes, they were all in 20 Feet from Stardom. And the monies that's raised will go to send children to college. And if anybody would like to call and donate, and you want to know how to call me and donate, they can use my phone number, 323-939-5808.
Awesome.
And give me a call.
All right, that's a good way to get to speak to Mabel John and do a good deed while you're at it.
That's true.
Great. Before we go, do you have a Facebook page or a Twitter account or anything like that where people can connect?
I do, but I don't know enough about Facebook. I get all this Facebook stuff. I have a Facebook page, but I think you would have to send it to me in the form of an email.
Okay.
My email address is Dr. Mabel. It's Dr. No period.
Okay.
Mabel. Dr. Mabel. @AOL.com.
Okay, great. I hope you get a good response from this, and
I really hope so too. And I'm so glad to talk to you.
Oh, I'm glad, tickled to death to speak with you. I've waited 2 weeks, and now I'm kind of sad that we're almost to the end. But you have some great history and a great story.
We can always do this again.
We can do this 100 times.
Well, you just let me know whenever you're ready.
Okay.
And I'm ready.
All right.
Whenever you're ready.
That sounds great. If you'll give me just a minute to run over some credits. Don't hang up just yet, though, if you don't mind.
Oh, okay. Let's make it fast because I'm on my way to the Mortuary.
You got it. You got it. Let everybody know that Stars on Tap is brought to you by LexingtonBroadcasting.com's Kickin' Country USA for their very best in top 40 country music on the internet. I'd like to thank my wife, Betty, who's our technical advisor. Without Betty, we couldn't pull this off. She kind of fixes what I break and what I don't know how to work, and she'll figure it out and keeps us going. And I'd like to thank our co-producer, which is Ms. Rhea Roma of Rhea's Rescues in the greater Los Angeles area. I'd also like to thank Big Dog Productions for having Dr. Mabel John on today. I'd like to mention OperationBlanketsOfLove.org, where you can take a blanket or a sheet, any kind of linen material, to an animal shelter and help an animal be comfortable while it waits to be adopted. I'd also like to thank and mention SavingCanineLivesPlus.org, also a rescue unit run by my friend Bobby Kimball, formerly of Toto. They run a rescue operation in the Los Angeles area as well. And I'd also like to thank God for the opportunity of speaking with Dr. Mabel John today and spreading the word of her new music and her story. I mean, gee whiz, the story itself. We're also glad to have her on and as well. I'm your host, Steve Martin. Until next time, enjoy the music.